You're listening or watching Real Conversations with Jacob Young. Real Conversations is sponsored by Boys Town, saving children, healing families for over 100 years. They are literally changing young lives every single day. Please go to boystown.org to find out how you can help support Boys Town. While you're on the site, be sure to check out all their parenting tips that they have there to offer. RCJY is also sponsored by Lane Frost Brand, made for the champion in you. They have amazing hats, hoodies, and so much more, something for the whole family. Go to lanefrost.com. And hey, be sure to use Jacob15. You'll save 15% on anything and everything. Lane Frost Brand. Now, this week, we're telling a story of a man named Brady. He was busy with two brothers of his own, with his dad. They were four men living all together, but they were all alone. Till the one day when Florence Henderson met his TV dad, they knew it was much more than a hunch because this group must somehow form a family. That's the way they all became the world's most iconic bunch. My guest this week has been in front of the cameras almost his entire life. He appeared on Broadway in Bob Fosse's Pippin. He's toured the country in musicals like Grease and West Side Story, to name just a few. He also has his own band, in addition to being one of the famous Brady Kids, a role he's played on TV, variety specials, movies, and even in a cartoon. You know my guest this week as the one and only Greg Brady. He's the one and only Barry Williams. You know what time it is. It's time to keep it real with Real Conversations with Jacob Young. Welcome to the show, Barry.
Hello, Jacob, and it's nice to be with you, and thank you for the nice introduction.
Well, it's so nice to have a real television icon on the show this week. The Brady Bunch, it means so much to so many fans.
It has had a remarkable history, even by television standards. And I'm proud to have been a part of it, and I have certainly been a promoter of the brand, if you will, over the years. And you know, keeping a career alive for 54 years, there's a lot of diversifying and different directions to go. And just with the Brady Bunch alone, we've had the original sitcom, the cartoon show, as you mentioned, the variety show, a very Brady Christmas and the Brady Brides. And then they did a grown-up version called the Bradys in the 80s. And we had books and movies and plays. And I'd written a book in the meantime called Growing Up Brady, which kind of depicts those 5-6 years of us together. And then that I was able to turn into a 2-hour television movie for NBC in 2001. So there's been a lot of Bradiness over the years, and right up until the year before last with the HGTV show, a very Brady renovation.
Oh, wow. I didn't see that one, but I'll have to check that out. Now, speaking of growing up, at a time when there was only three networks that were pretty much on, a significant percentage of American kids that grew up with you and your TV siblings, what was it like for you to grow up in front of all of us?
Well, it was a different world, for sure. It wasn't nearly as fragmented, not nearly as specific. You know, we have whole networks dedicated to niche programming. I just mentioned one, HGTV. I mean, it's just a show about you know, living rooms and bedrooms and painting them and making them different. But it was an unusual and a remarkable, powerful, changing experience. The years that we did the original show, I was 14 through 20. And so formative years for all of us, but the teen years in particular. And, I welcomed the attention, and I was proud of the show, but there are uncomfortable moments. I mean, you're going through all the awkwardness of those years, and you know, it's hard to be, oh, it's too cool for the room all the time when you're feeling, well, wait a minute, I've not ever been in this kind of a situation before. But it was loaded with travel and adventure. We were recording. We toured as a concert group, the Brady Kids. We did promotional events for ABC, as well as working on the coolest lot in all of Hollywood, Paramount Studios, yeah. where The Odd Couple and Love American Style and Bonanza, Star Trek, Mission Impossible, and Mannix, and Happy Days was there. Mork and Mindy. Wow. I mean, just even The Godfather was shooting next door to us for a period. So I mean, it was really, really an eventful and an exciting part of life.
Yeah, I was going to say, what an exciting time to be on that lot.
Yes,
unreal.
Yes. And it's true too. When you know we. Even at the lowest ratings would have put us in the top 30. But even with that, we would still, by today's standards, that would be a number one show on the network for the week. There were just that many more people watching the just only three networks.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. I'm sure you've told this story 1,000 times. I don't know. And maybe my listeners don't. How did you get the role of Greg Brady?
I'd been working for about 3 years as an actor. I started when I was 11. And I worked quite a bit in television as, you know, in guest roles and guest parts. So shows like The FBI. I don't know if you'd remember Roy Thinnes and the Invaders, The Mod Squad, Marcus Welby, M.D., It Takes a Thief, Mission Impossible, yeah. Gomer Pyle and That Girl, and a lot of shows. What's significant about That Girl and Gomer Pyle is that they were both, one, on the Paramount Studios lot, and they were both directed by a man named John Rich, who was also instrumental not only as the director for our pilot episode, but for the first six regular series episodes that we did. And the casting process was laborious, and there were several callbacks and a lot of indecision on what direction they were going to go. But when they finally figured out that Florence Henderson was going to be Mom and Robert Reed was going to be Dad, they knew at least what the coloring and the kind of the ages of the kids was going to be. And I'd been sort of in the running as a result of being on the lot. The studio knew me, the network, both of those shows were ABC, I believe, but the network knew me and the director. So, you know, it's kind of a toss up there of having the experience and having the contact and approval, but also being the right age, the right height, the right color hair. Well, the right color hair then.
Yeah, right.
And as I say, it's been a while. But so I think that's, you know, that all of that combined kind of brought together that the role of Big Brother Greg.
And when you guys were shooting the pilot, was it already scheduled for a full year, or were you just shooting the pilot and it was a test?
Just shooting the pilot. That television didn't work like that then. There was a pilot, and then there was a whole other process where another 99% of the shows get thrown out. Everything was a struggle for the first couple of years. I don't know that we ever, well, I think maybe once in five, we got picked up for a full year. So the pilot was done. It looked like they had a slot and a lineup for ABC. That was a very, very powerful lineup for family programming, starting with Please Don't Eat the Daisies, and then it was Brady Bunch and the Partridge Family. We had Room 222. We had The Odd Couple, Love American Style. So it was a big block, a whole night that they were tagging onto. But no, we struggled from the beginning, and then we almost didn't make it past the first half of the first season until we did there was a Christmas episode. For those familiar with the Brady Bunch, it was the episode where Mom Carol was supposed to sing at choir for Christmas but lost her voice,
right?
And little Cindy got on Santa's lap, and precious thing that she is, she didn't want any presents for herself, she didn't want any toys for Christmas. All she wanted was for Mommy to get her voice back. And miracle of miracles, or as I like to say, in a very Brady way, just in time with the right throat wrappings and rest, Mom woke up and there was her voice, and she sang, I think it was O Come All Ye Faithful.
Right.
And it touched a lot of people. And our ratings shot up. And that guaranteed us that first year, and then subsequently we kind of just continued to improve.
Yeah.
For 5 years.
Now, when the Bradys were singing, who was that the studio that came up with that idea? Was it like a management or agent? Or, you know, whose idea was that to get you guys all singing on stage?
Mostly mine.
Really?
Yes. We did ended up doing about five Brady Bunch episodes with music, with Sunshine Day and Keep On Keeping On and When It's Time to Change. Our producer, Sherwood Schwartz, treated it kind of as a novelty, which, you know, always made us amateurs, you know, in contests or, you know, having to overcome obstacles or things. But on the sidelines, I wanted to record, seriously record, and I had a contract with Famous Music and Paramount Records at the time. And they thought it would be a good idea to do a Christmas album, which we did. And I appealed to him and said, you know, there's so many families, you know, kids from big families like the Osmond brothers and the Jackson Five, the DeFranco family, the Cowsills, that were doing, you know, really, really well. And it would open up, you know, a whole other kind of demographic for the show. And, you know, he listened to me and it kind of came out the way it did. The challenge with us was we're all actors. We weren't hired as singers.
Right.
So, you know, the talent level for that varied. Some mics up, some mics off completely.
Yeah.
And so, it was kind of what it was, but it was a great adventure.
Well, it's certainly enjoyable and obviously led to you doing musical theater in your life.
Absolutely. The first thing I did when Brady Bunch in, and you mentioned my first role, I flew to New York and I auditioned for Bob Fosse to do the title role in Pippin. And I won the first, it was the first Broadway tour that I did. And then they invited me to come onto Broadway at the Imperial Theater. And I performed there for a short time and went back to California to do Brady Bunch. They called it the Brady Bunch Hour. It was a variety hour, which was also a ton of fun, and it's very silly, but we had some great guests, you know, Milton Berle and Farrah Fawcett, and Rick Dees and Vincent Price and Paul Williams. And,
oh yeah,
a whole host of great. Tina Turner was on the show. It was great.
Oh, I love all those names.
Charo,
yes, yeah. Of course. Oh, that's awesome. I know you have a podcast too. Why don't you tell us a little bit about your podcast so my listeners can tune into yours?
Well, this is a remarkable medium, unavailable really until now. And, you know, podcasts, again, are kind of, you know, going a niche direction. I love your format. It's frank. It's forward. It's open conversation, straight talk. We have a bit of a formula. It's called The Real Brady Bros, as in brothers, The Real Brady Bros. And it is what has become known as episodic recap. So what Christopher Knight and I do, Christopher Knight, who played Peter, what we do is we literally study an episode per week and watch it at our own homes. We live in different states. He's in California. I'm in Missouri. And take notes and exchange those notes. And then through the course of the podcast, we dissect it, but not just plot points, because most people are familiar with the plot, but what was going on at the studio at the time with the guest stars and how was he perceiving what happened? It was different for me. I'm 4 years older than Christopher. And so it's kind of an insight both to the show, its background, the stars, and perspective, mm-hmm. because the way Greg was written probably wouldn't be, you know, it's a real skirt chaser, would probably not be written that way today. So we can talk about that. Some of the dialogue that would go on, or we talk about the takeaways of the Brady Bunch. You know, what made it, what gave it its warm and fuzzy, its smile? What kind of lit up your heart about it? And of course, Mike Brady was responsible for most of those wonderful lectures that were very fair.
Yeah, of course.
You know, very judicial and balanced and seemed to help the whole world, you know, operate better. But a lot about communication, getting along, all for one, one for all, that kind of thing. So we discussed those things in no particular order. We've done Gotcha. We have 117 shows. We've done, I think, about 30. And we pop around from week to week and have a really good time with it. It's we're talking about, you can find it anywhere that you can find podcasts. So Spotify, or we have a Facebook page too, where fans, they write in and ask questions. And so we do it. In addition to the podcast, we answer their questions.
Oh, that's great.
As a part of the podcast, and all of that's at the at Real Brady Bros Facebook. So,
oh, that's fantastic! Great. Well, make sure you guys tune in, check it out. Now, with social media platforms like TikTok, so many kids these days, they're dreaming of becoming famous. And for you, what were the pluses and minuses of being a young star?
Well, let's go with the pluses. The pluses were that it made getting work, I could get my foot in the door. I had a lot of experience as a youngster. By the time I was 20, I was pretty much a veteran of television. So that provided a little bit more choice. I think the special treatment thing about, better tables and reservations and things, that might be a little bit overplayed. But it did connect me with a lot of people. I mean, literally millions of people. And so my experience as I would travel around the country doing plays and, crisscrossing, and I've done this, I've done over 85 different productions of musicals. Mm-hmm. And many of them were touring shows. So, I'll go to a coffee shop and people will pick up a conversation with me like they've known me, their whole life. Hey, Greg or Barry, what are you doing in town? I'm doing a show. Really? Okay. What, you want to come on over to the house on Saturday? Mom's cooking up some chicken. You would not, that kind of a thing. And so it's given me a great opportunity to meet and know people that I might not otherwise have known. And fortunately, because of the type of show that the Brady Bunch is, people tend to be warmer and more receptive than, let's say, if you're playing, like a kidnapping, murdering, drug taking, boogeyman with a chainsaw.
Yeah.
Right. So I found all of that to be positive. That's not for everybody. I like people, and so that's nice. I think the hardest part is trying to live up to the expectations. At 40, you don't do that anymore. You stop caring. And when you're my age, you realize that nobody ever cared in the first place. But when you're 20, 21, 2, you care about what everybody thinks. And I think there are a lot of high expectations for situations I just wasn't prepared for that were, more mature than my age or experience would allow. And I put a lot of pressure on me. For instance, the first show we performed at was Caesar's Palace, main showroom in Las Vegas, on television for an Ed Sullivan special. That's a lot of heavyweight. Cher is there, and Danny Thomas is there, and just a whole host. And then the Brady Kids show up.
Yeah.
Those kinds of things, I think added a lot of pressure. I'm sometimes asked if I could go back, would I change anything? And I would. And the one thing I would change is, chill. Take it easy. There's time. Don't worry so much. Don't be so hard on yourself. That's enjoy the ride.
Yeah.
And that's taken me a minute or two to put together.
Yeah.
And I do.
It's funny you said that, because that's actually, for every episode that I have, everybody gets to take a ride in the Jacob Young time machine to give their younger self some advice. But thank you so much for sharing that.
Oh, that's exactly what it would be.
Yeah. And any specific advice you would give youngsters just in day-to-day life that, that may not be in the show business, because we do have a lot of younger listeners that pop on here as well. Just anything that you would give some advice to some of the youngsters that are out there.
Well, you brought up a good point about some of the social media platforms that I think the younger kids, especially, I shouldn't even limit it to that. People generally will get on in order to to create a name or to create attention or to create whatever we consider to be fame. It's a very slippery slope. A lot of people do dangerous things. A lot of people do stupid things. A lot of people do things that aren't really true or in line with who they are in order to gain the attention that they're seeking, which is, you know, often being sought for other reasons.
Right.
And they're not going to be satisfied by getting recognized. So the advice, if I were to give it or someone ask, would be true to yourself. Make good choices. And remember that it's going to live forever. Forever.
Yeah.
And so if somebody wants to find something on you, they can, because it'll be right there. And so you want to be things that give you pride and that are in a line. And then let the attention and let the awareness or the recognition come out of those qualities instead of just manipulation.
Great advice. Be the authentic you.
Yes.
Now, tell our listeners about your musical group. It's Barry Williams and the Travelers, correct?
Yeah. Yes, although many people say Travelers, so I appreciate Travelers. We wanted to use that name because we live in Branson, Missouri, and don't work in Branson, Missouri, so we travel. So we're Travelers. We get in the, you know, we get either pop into the cars or jump on an airplane or rent a bus and or an SUV even, and we do largely classic music, songs that you know, songs that you can sing along with. A lot of the there's a big chunk that comes from the 70s, but classic that go back before that. It has a country bent. It's a wide variety of well-recognized kinds of tunes, some originals. It's a trio with my wife, who's been a performer since, well, the same time I was. She started professionally when she was 7 years old. she is a hula dancer, so we've got a little tiny bubbles in there to teach audience members how to hula. I play an acoustic guitar, living the Johnny Bravo dream, and mm-hmm. We have a lead electric player, and my wife Tina plays kind of Hawaiian Polynesian percussion instruments, different kinds of things that keep time and what have you. It's intimate. We usually use we perform for a wedding sometimes, special events, corporate events, birthdays, because it's a little more, you know, intimate than a big auditorium or a stadium kind of thing. It's, you know, it's kind of an acoustic set. It goes with stories. And at one point I don't just sing Sunshine Day. I make it a sing along and teach everybody in the audience how to do the Brady choreography.
That's awesome.
For those who stand up, I make them honorary Bradys for life. So it's kind of a good time, entertainment and fun musical project. And we've been at it for, gosh, the last 5-6 years. Just after I finished doing my variety show here in Branson. So that's what the Travelers. All of that, by the way, my website is Barry Williams.
It's the Barry Williams Official. It's right here. It's scrolling across the bottom of the screen right now.
Oh, perfect. Well, the reason I say that, the official, we had to add that because there are, turns out there are other Barry Williamses, right?
Yeah.
And so some of them have websites that you don't want your children going to. A couple down in Atlanta and what have you. Anyway, So Barry Williams Official is my site, and all of the Travelers, what we're doing, and bits of our trio and music and events, and you know what we're doing and where I'm going and what the schedule is and coming up. And I've got next year's booked all the way up through April already.
Wow!
Which will be
That's great. Yeah, I checked out the site. All the information is on there. You can keep up with Barry, everything he's doing, from appearances to shows that he's playing. So go to BarryWilliamsOfficial.com to stay up with Barry. Now, British TV classic comedy farces continue to be very popular here in the U.S. Tell us about your up-and-coming production of the new British farce, Condemonium, at the New Theater.
Okay. New Theater is wonderful. It's the most successful dinner theater in the country. It's because they have great food and great entertainment, and they keep them separate. But it's a wonderful venue in Overland Park, Kansas. I've done three shows for them, and they had called and said, they said, Barry, would you come back and do another show? And I said, and then what do you want to do? And I said, I want to laugh. I want people to laugh. They called me about 6 weeks later, and they said, we think we have the show for you. It's a British farce. It's never been done here in the U.S., and it's been translated for Americans. Because some of the references are a little too, UK.
Right.
Condomonium, which is a play on words for pandemonium. It takes place in a condominium, and everything goes wrong. All the secrets and the characters and the people and their eccentricities. And I play the owner of the condo, and I'm trying to rent it because I need money because I've been fired, but nobody knows that, and they don't know why. And I've got this big house in Long Island and another one on Fire Island. And so there are all kinds of crisscrossing. And now, think of a farce as like the slamming of doors kind of thing. One door closes, the other person comes in. And so all of that is kind of happening in clockwork. And it's very, very – it took me – up twice as long to read as it should have because I had to stop to laugh as I went. So I'm going out to I'll live there for the 3 months in Overland Park and doing the show from mid-February until mid-April.
Wonderful.
Yeah.
And you said it was the biggest touring theater in the country?
Most successful dinner theater.
Most successful dinner theater. And you've done so much with like summer stock. And for the kids that don't know about this mostly, that lost form of theater, what was the Star System summer stock like in its heyday?
It was intense for everybody, but particularly the players, because the actors would, for the chorus and the dancers and for the roles would be hired for an entire summer. And generally it would consist of like six to eight shows. And while you're playing, while the theater's playing one show at night, they're rehearsing the next one during the day. Mm. With the guests or the guest stars that would come in, they would only be doing, coming in to do their role. But they had to put all of that together in a week's time to start the next show. And so it was a very intense, we'd come in and everyone pulled together as a leading character. I would want to come in with a show I've already done, yeah. Preferably, or B, off book. Work-wise, word-wise, and that helped the process quite a bit because there's a lot to do when you put together a musical, not just with the orchestra, but the lighting and the marks and the changing of the sets and the changing of costumes and you're blocking and then trying to make it all believable. So it was an intense time. I'm really sorry that it's not as popular now as it was. There are still some that do it. I know we have here in Springfield, Missouri, mm-hmm. The college, I think the University of Missouri puts on has a tent and they do a summer season of shows.
That's nice. I did Beauty and the Beast on Broadway. I played Lumiere, and my best friend, who was the managing producer, still is my best friend to this day, grew up in Ohio, in Akron, and his mentor was John Kenley. So he tells me stories about John, and I know that you work for John.
I did at least six shows for him.
Yeah.
Grease a couple of times, and West Side Story. I did Grease and West Side Story, and it's not coming to me right now. It's been a minute or two, but many shows. And Akron, Dayton, Warren.
Warren, Ohio, that's what it was. It wasn't Akron, but... I'm in that area.
Yeah. All part of the John Kenley Player Tour, and he was a most delightful, most eccentric, most unusual, and at the bottom line, a very loving showman. And he was very successful for years and years and years with followers. Yes.
Yeah. Florence Henderson.
I did Pippin. for John Kinley players. And you'll never guess who my leading player was.
Who was it?
It was Tommy Toon.
Oh, wow.
So that was a big change, change for that character. And he, of course, interpreted it quite differently and quite effectively.
Oh, I'm sure. Yeah, John had tons of big stars that would come through and do his shows, the Kinley players.
Well, we all loved him, you know, and he it's very old school, came from the circus. And he, as a promoter, and took very good care of his people and his guests, and so everyone wanted to, you know, jump on that bandwagon for a summer.
Yeah, that's what I have always heard, is that he really took care of the actors, yes. And paid them like stars.
Yes. Yeah. Yes.
Florence Henderson was one of the nicest people in show business. Were there any life lessons you learned from your TV mom?
Oh, yes, 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 yes. Did you ever have the pleasure of meeting her?
I have, only one time.
Okay. Well, please know that it was a lifelong friendship. I mean, we hit it off immediately. We had a great time on the set together with a sense of humor. She was a mentor for me. She was the one really whom I went to for advice about a career in musical theater and diversifying beyond just film work and television. That's kind of the source of that that date that has been discussed. I took her to the Coconut Grove in Los Angeles to see a singer and talk about music, and I called it a date. She kind of called it a, you know, an event, but she was very kind to me. But perhaps the most important thing that I learned from Florence was how to behave and how to handle yourself graciously in public. She was not someone who took her success, for granted. She was very conscious of who helped get her there and who kept her there, meaning her fans. She had a very, very good work ethic, and she was very gracious with people, even when they were interrupting her. If she was talking to somebody or she was even out to dinner, she would take time with them. And I asked her about that and watched her quite a bit like that, because there are many that are not comfortable around people, and they would, I've seen fans get shut down just horribly. And she showed me how to have, you know, an understanding of where they're coming from. And, you know, they want to be in your space for a minute. And with a show like ours, it's, you know, a couple of minutes, it's like putting your arms around, you know, and getting a little bear hug, you know, it's like, oh, you're the Brady Bunch, you know, kind of the heart light goes on kind of deal. So, that was very important for me, because I didn't know how to be in public. And, you know, if people would recognize me, I didn't know at first if they were making fun of me, or they were, or they're being, going to be negative or just intrusive or rude or what. And watching her gave me an opportunity to create real connections and experiences.
Yeah, it sounds like she was a great asset in your life and your career as a TV star, and in all mediums across the board. That's wonderful. I know I've been son to many mothers in TV. I mean, I did 25 years in daytime television, multiple different shows, and it's true. You starting so young, you really look up to the people that are playing, maybe your parents or anybody that's older than you that can give you that sound advice. Obviously trying to avoid those pitfalls.
May have something in common. One of those shows was General Hospital, right?
Yeah, I was on General Hospital for a short time.
And I did before Brady Bunch. I did General Hospital, played a young boy with a rheumatic heart, and then later again in the 80s, I went back and I did a short stint for probably 10 or 11 episodes, where I played a dance instructor, and I was teaching the women of Port Charles how to dance and prepping them for Broadway, and then putting them later on a bus to nowhere and taking their money, kind of like the Music Man,
yes.
Taking their money and splitting.
Yeah. Oh, that's great. Yeah, yeah. I played Luke and Laura's son on there for several years, and then, you know, was going to be a movie star, and I was going to, you know, make that transition, and did some things, did some, you know, a bit 20th Century Fox film, or Fox Searchlight film, and of course ended up going back to daytime, and I went to New York, and it was great for me because that's when I got to do Broadway, and I was on All My Children simultaneously, so it was a it's always been great. I always called it the blue collared world for actors because you're working so hard, and towards the end there was, you know, they're still doing it so they do about 8 shows up to 10 in 4 days now.
I've heard that described, and I mean this in the most positive and loving way possible, but I've heard actors describe that schedule as being in kind of like the velvet coffin.
Yes.
Because it's, I mean, for an actor to have steady work and well-paying work and you know, on a national stage is great, but that workload is very, very difficult to sustain.
Yeah, and I did it for 25 years. I pretty much only one little period where I was only about 5 or 6 months that I wasn't working. So I just continuously did it. I've always heard the term golden handcuffs, and I felt like that. I was artistically stuck, but financially was doing well. And I eventually had to really figure out what I really wanted. And I decided that it was time for me to jump ship. And that's been 5 years ago. And I've gone into producing. I've got several films that are out there in the film festival circuit right now. I'm in development with a major motion picture right now, which I'll be producing as well. So it really was my heart, my artist side of me was dying inside on just that repetitiveness of being on that medium.
Right, right. And it sounds to me, too, you're much more diversified and there's much more choice in your world in terms of the projects that you choose to either produce or get behind or oversee. And that's important because when you have choice, you can back off for a little bit, get back in there and give it your full energy.
That's right. TV audiences felt like the Bradys were a real family. Sons and fathers can sometimes have challenges with each other. What was it like working with Robert Reed, who had to live a very private life at that time that he was a popular TV star?
Well, that was very isolated from what the Brady family was going on in the Brady family. Our time together was, you know, largely on the set. We did go on a big trip to London together that he coordinated and paid for most of. Stratford-on-Avon to see a Shakespearean play, and in the classic Mousetrap in London, and we sailed on the QE2 over to Southampton to get there. So big experiences with all 6 Brady kids, his parents, and our school teacher. Mm-hmm. Robert was a very dedicated and well-trained, a classic actor. And I was taking acting very, very seriously. And so it sounds almost silly to say because of the nature of the comedy in the Brady Bunch, but, you know, the goal is to always make these things, no matter what, as real and with as much layering and content as you can. So he had acting games that we would sometimes play. You could say... put a different meaning attached to the scene that we were going to do. So instead of making it about, about Marsha running for student body president, why don't we pretend that really it's just Greg wanting to be the president of the United States, you know, and change the stakes and the intention of what the scene was. I found that all very fascinating and how to add depth to what it was. Speed dialogue. Would say the lines as fast as we could, so that we could just shake them off and not have to think about them. Sometimes we might all just change roles if there are 3 or 4 people, and I'd take Peter's lines, and Mike could take Bobby's lines, and Bobby would take Mike's lines, and that kind of thing. And that was all a very kind of expansive, kind of creative environment to be in, and it was great.
That's awesome. That's awesome. Yeah. My sponsor, Boys Town, they have a motto, and the motto is, he ain't heavy, he's my brother. Meaning, in our lives, at some point, we've all had somebody who's carried us. Who's carried you, Barry?
Well, you've hit two of them. Robert Reed and Florence were very, very a significant part of my professional and in some ways personal life as well. But I come from a family that was very nuclear, and I had two older brothers growing up, very stable family background. I wouldn't say Brady Bunch, but my parents really encouraged us to be who we wanted to be. I had to fight with them a bit for them to allow me to pursue the arts. But they finally got that I was serious about it, and they were concerned. They were concerned, first, it takes a lot of mom's time, you know, carting you around to interviews and getting photos and agency meetings and then being at the set and all of that stuff. But they were able to work it out. Mom usually came with me. And so without that kind of support and without that background, I think they, among everyone, were the foundation for carrying me, and especially through the times when I was really, you know, developing and in circumstances that were ahead of my maturity level.
Thank you for sharing that. And I want to say, Barry, thank you so much for joining me today. It was really an honor to get to speak to someone who's was a role model when I was growing up and who still is such a great and talented guy. Everybody knows you can follow Barry, of course, on Instagram, at the Barry Williams. And again, of course, check out everything at BarryWilliamsOfficial.com to keep up with him. Thank you so much, Barry. We had such a great time at that golf event.
If you want to have a great time, check out Real Brady Bros. That's taken off a bit as a podcast, I enjoy listening back to it when I'm kind of checking it first.
Well, I'm definitely going to be listening, and I hope everybody out there will be listening to it as well. That's about all the time that we have for this week with Real Conversations, sponsored by Boys Town and the Boys Town National Hotline. So if you're in crisis, you need someone to simply talk to, please call the Boys Town toll-free National Hotline at 800-448-3000. If you don't feel like talking, text voice to 20121. Someone will get back to you immediately. Thanks for joining me on Real Conversations. I'm Jacob Young. Till next time, love yourself and love each other.